You're listening to the Godfather and Gorney podcast on Rivals.com with your host, the Godfather of Recruiting, Mike Farrell.
I could be moving from my office to being one of those absolute degenerates that smells like moldy cheese and death.
And national recruiting analyst, Adam Gorney.
Grover isn't around as much, but Oscar the Grouch is still around a lot. Elmo has taken a prominent role. I mean, he's like the main character.
That's right. Welcome to another edition of the Godfather and Gorney podcast. My name is Dave Barry, and I'm joined by the stars of the show, Mike Farrell out on the East Coast and Adam Gorney here on the West Coast. We've got a lot to talk about. Guys, this is our 50th episode, so it's something to be excited about.
Yeah, that is exciting. Yay. That's exciting, Dave.
We got one episode for every one episode for every year Mike Farrell has worked at Rivals.com, am I right?
Yeah. We've got one episode for every listener we get every week.
Yeah, that's even better. All right, well, Mike, I'll let you jump right into it. We had a lot of commitments over the past week, so I'll let you start with that, and we'll get into the rundown.
Yeah, I think there were like 81 Power 5 commitments over the last week, which is ridiculous. And usually, you know, late July and August, you don't see a big rush like this, so I'm not sure what's going on. But I broke them down a little bit, so I'm going to throw out names here. Gorney, I don't know if you know a lot about some of these guys, but some of them are West Coast guys. But Bryce Young is certainly a West Coast guy. He's probably the biggest name commitment, even though he's a 2020, because he's a quarterback, and he was the only quarterback of note to commit this past week. Going to USC despite JT Daniels. Why, Gorney?
Well, I mean, if you think about it this way, JT Daniels will start as a freshman, sophomore, and junior. Bryce Young has 2 years of high school left. So Bryce Young will redshirt or just sit behind JT Daniels for 1 year and then have an opportunity to go in and get the starting job, which is, it's perfect timing. So, you know, you think about these 2020 commits, they still have 2 years of high school left. So I think the interesting thing with Bryce Young was that USC really didn't come hard after DJ Wagalele, the number one player in the country. Bryce Young was priority number one for them, and they got him. It seemed like Oklahoma, Bryce Young was priority number one for Oklahoma as well. And now after Bryce Young committed to USC, Oklahoma offers Wagalele, and he's interested in visiting there during the season. So,
but he's not going to go to Oklahoma. I mean, Bryce Young would have been more likely to go to Oklahoma.
Right, yeah, much more fits his style. I think Oregon and Clemson are the two teams to beat for Wagalele, who looks like Ben Roethlisberger right now. He's a great player, fantastic offseason, should be phenomenal this year, surrounded by a lot of top receivers. But Bryce Young to USC, Oklahoma gave everything they had, and you know, Southern California kids just still want to go to USC.
But not a prototypical USC quarterback at all, not even close.
In fact, not at all.
Seems like a better fit in Oklahoma's system.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Spencer Rattler, I mean, it makes sense that Bryce Young would follow suit because he's very similar in the sense that he is a pocket passer. He likes to stay, but he can move around, kind of prolong plays, run if needed, those kinds of things. So USC is definitely going to have to adjust because Bryce Young is not an under-the-center, play-action-type quarterback. He's much more of a shotgun guy, but so is JT Daniels in a way. JT Daniels did shotgun his entire career at Modern Day. He can be an under-the-center guy, but I think they're going to have to adjust their offense a little bit. They have the skill players to do it. Tyler Vaughns, Michael Pittman, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Stephen Carr. They have the players to do kind of whatever they want to do on offense. So I still think it'll be a pro-style look, but with a lot more shotgun stuff and a lot more, you know, run pass option stuff. So there'll be some new wrinkles sprinkled in there.
A couple of other highly ranked guys that just committed. Andrew Booth committed to Clemson today, a very, very good cornerback. I think he's going to be a lockdown guy there. Continues their tradition of recruiting elite athletic corners with good length. That's a huge commitment. Trayvon Walker committed to Georgia this past week. So now you're talking about Nolan Smith and Trayvon Walker as a 1-2 punch there. Trayvon Walker can play defensive end or defensive tackle. He's that perfect guy where, you know, let him grow into a D-tackle if he does. If he doesn't, let him stay at defensive end. And he is very good as a pass rusher, but also extremely good against the run. So Clemson and Georgia, you know, the rich getting richer. USC, I mentioned with Bryce Young, the rich getting richer there. Stanford, Stephen Heron, was an interesting one.
Can you believe that was in the last week? It feels like that happened a month
ago.
Yeah,
I know, but that's because there were 81 commitments in the last week. It's unbelievable. But Stephen Heron flipping, the old flip-a-rooney, going to Stanford. Obviously, academics had something to do with that. You know, you and I both feel his best years are ahead of him. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. We unfortunately got to see him at the five-star challenge play inside a lot. And that is not where he belongs. He's definitely an outside pass rusher. But they've got a good recent tradition of putting out some guys that can get after the passer from the outside. So, you know, watch him develop at Stanford, and that was a big one for them.
Yeah, definitely. And Michigan academics isn't exactly chopped liver. No. So I don't know how much of a factor that played into it. Turning down Stanford for a lot of kids is very tough. I mean, it's just, you know, kind of everything you'd want in a program. It was interesting, though, because, you know, he had been a longtime commit. He's kind of a local kid, being from Kentucky, to back off of Michigan when he did to go to Stanford. Does, you know, speak highly of Stanford, maybe a little poorly of Michigan being able to keep that kid. But yeah, at the five-star challenge, he was kind of an enigma, kind of the same kid we saw last year, and unfairly had to do a lot of inside stuff when he is an outside pass rusher, could stand up and move around a little bit, that kind of guy. So definitely a big one for Stanford there.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who's better also in games than he is in camp settings, and we've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big commitment for them. Brendan Gant going to Florida State, keeping that recent Florida State defensive back recruiting reputation going. I mean, I think they've recruited as well as anybody at defensive back, and that includes LSU, that includes Florida, and some of the other programs that claim to be DBU. I think they've done a better job in recent years, at least the last 4 or 5 years, going back to Jalen Ramsey, recruiting defensive backs, whether they be safeties with Derwin James or cornerbacks, you know, Levante Taylor, guys like that. Joseph, now, let me see if I'm going to screw this name up. Is it Ngata?
Joseph Ngata.
Ngata. So I said Ngata. Yeah. So it's Ngata.
Now that's a kid who I think, if you watch his film, is arguably one of the best wide receiver films in the country. And Clemson made him a huge priority and got him all the way across the country. He has a brother, Daniel, in the 2020 class who could follow him to Clemson. That could be a pipeline into Northern California, much like Alabama's made a pipeline into Northern California. Ngata has awesome film, a big wide outside wide receiver that, like you said, will continue that WRU tradition.
Yeah, they're WRU for sure. I think when you're talking about recruiting and developing NFL players, they're WRU. I don't know who else. You know, maybe Alabama can make a sort of a case for that, but they haven't put as many in the NFL that have been successful.
Right. Yeah, he is an awesome player. I think, you know, as you see him more through the senior year, and he's a kid who I hope shows up at an all-star game somewhere, because I think he could be really special.
And then RBU, at least when it comes to recruiting over the last few years, is Georgia getting John Emery, going into Louisiana, pulling him out of there over LSU is extremely impressive. My first prediction wrong in the history of my career. Actually, we got the forecast model now that we're going to be releasing soon. But I went in there so proudly, and I picked LSU, and I'm like, this is a no-brainer. This kid's going to stay home. And then Georgia did it again. Just, you know, it's not just in-state kids. They can go to Pennsylvania. They can go to North Carolina. They can go to Florida. They can go to Louisiana and get running backs.
Yeah, and that's trouble, because Alabama can go in there and you know, get some top players and stuff. But if Georgia starts doing that, that's even more problematic for LSU, especially for LSU, which doesn't have necessarily the next big-time running back. You know, that Fournette and Geis are gone. You know, they're going to go to Nick Brissett and, you know, some other guys that are kind of emerging. So Emery had an opportunity to go to LSU and really – stake his claim there early in his career, and instead he's going to Georgia, which is loaded at running back.
And they lost out on Etienne, who went to Clemson, who I think could have been a big-time running back at LSU.
Now, if you're John Emery, though, what are you thinking, Mike? I mean, you have DeAndre Swift there now, Holyfield there now, James Cook is coming in, and Zamir White is there. So, right. You know.
You're thinking you're better than all of them, and that's what most of these kids think. You know? And again, it's a commitment. I mean, it's a verbal commitment. It means nothing. know,
right.
He could flip elsewhere. Who knows? You know, but I think it speaks poorly of Ed Orgeron and the recruiting there. You know, not just this one. You know, they're doing okay recruiting wise, but every in-state kid should pretty much that they target should pretty much go to LSU. I mean, they've got the best home field recruiting advantage in all of college football, and you know, like you said, they lose some to Alabama. That's acceptable because Alabama wins national championships every other year. But yeah, you know, to lose one to Georgia, that's a tough one. Georgia also getting Ryan Davis, a linebacker from Florida.
Trouble
Davis. Now he's a rangy kid and quick twitch kid. We saw him at the 5-star challenge. He's going to be all over the field for them. I think he's an outside, but it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up playing inside or outside. And then Micah Pittman going to Oregon. That's another West Coast one for you. That's a big one. Oregon's kicking butt in recruiting.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, they are. And Micah Pittman, his father, Michael Pittman, played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He had grown up a kind of a Gators fan, you know, went back there and kind of got emotional at his old elementary school. Florida was a big-time player. He loved Dan Mullen's offense, all those kinds of things. But Mario Cristobal and that staff of assistants are incredibly aggressive. They get the kids on campus and love them up a whole lot. Obviously, the facilities and everything there are, you know, top of the line. And, you know, they have the best class in the conference by far. I think they're 1,000 points ahead of any other school in terms of points for the class. They have the highest star average by far. They are kicking major butt, and they still have some room. They only have 17 commits, and they still have some room to really close out this class in a big way. Getting Brian Addison, we haven't talked about him. UCLA, he had a little bit of an academic roadblock, a test score issue, so Oregon jumped on that and got him up there, and he could be a guy that can go either way and play there as well. So I think they're doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I didn't count him in my list of commitments because he's a kid who signed with one school and then decided to sign with another school after some academic hiccups, but he's a big get for him as well. You know, he counts towards last year's class. Won't count towards 2019, but again, that's another big get. And Cristobal, you know, listen, he has a great reputation as a recruiter. He did his work not only at, you know, places like Alabama and Miami, but I remember when he was up at Rutgers, you know, he was a very good recruiter in Florida for them under Greg Schiano. So the guy knows what he's doing. He can get things done. 2020, a lot of 2020s other than Bryce Young. Des Moines Kennedy going to Auburn, a very elite linebacker. Nearly a top 100 guy in the 2020 class, known for being a quick to the football type of guy. He's going to add to their team speed. Brian Robinson, 6'2", 175 pound receiver, going to Miami. Another 2020 grab there. Sergio Allen, linebacker, big rangy kid, going to Clemson, who's going to just grow and grow, get bigger and bigger. So Clemson making my list of top commitments for the past week. Three times. Other notable teams, because they got Levante Bentley as well. He was the third one. West Virginia getting Isaiah Hazel from Maryland is important. You know, that's an important recruiting territory for them since they don't really have a home recruiting territory. Jonathan Dennis going to Miami. Shaheen Battle going to NC State. NC State is really doing a very, very good job. Arkansas also adding a lot of talent recently. I think they got 3 4-star commitments, if I look correctly, recently. So there's some teams like NC State and Arkansas. Missouri got Njoku, the brother, which was interesting. You know, that was a bit of a surprise to me. Not that he would choose Missouri. I mean, Missouri's a great program, but you know, you would think that Miami would make him a priority and try to get him down there. So A lot of big-time commitments. Warren Burrell to Tennessee, Jeffrey Carter to Texas A&M, 2 elite defensive backs. Colorado got a good running back, and Jaron Mangum. I mean, it just didn't stop. Last week was ridiculous. We get these commitment alerts, you know, through email, you know, internally, and the thing was going off every 2 seconds. It was just unbelievable.
It was to the point where you hardly were looking at them. It was so crazy. But let's talk NC State really quickly, Mike. Third in the ACC, better class right now than Miami, more 4-star commitments than Virginia Tech. doing a phenomenal job with this class, and very impressive.
Yeah, and you know what? They had a good season last year, and it sort of, you know, it sort of fell apart a little bit at the end of the year, but I think they got a lot of momentum from that season. They're number 16 in the country overall, and what they're doing is what NC State coaches have not been able to do, and that's keep kids in state. Their top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, their top 9 commitments ranked are from the state of North Carolina. So yeah, that tells you that they're doing a very good job selling to kids, you know, exactly what they want in state. UNC, you'd think, is the sleeping giant, of course, of the ACC, college football, and all this other stuff. They're coming off such a horrible year that it's extremely important for NC State to take advantage of this. And when you look at the top 10 recruits in the state of North Carolina, you got undecided, you got Sam Howell going to Florida State, then you got NC State, undecided, Notre Dame, NC State, Duke, NC State, West Virginia. You never see 5 out of 10 guys going to NC State from the state of North Carolina. It's been known as a state where people come in and poach and steal, so they're not allowing that to happen. We'll see how the season goes. They've got a terrific quarterback we're going to talk about in a little bit as well when we talk about NFL draft guys. But if they have a good season, I think this could be their best class in a very long time.
And then really quickly on Arkansas, Mike, I mean, Chad Morris really leveraging his contacts in Texas, gets a 4-star linebacker out of there, goes into Oklahoma for a 4-star defensive end, goes into Florida for a 4-star defensive end, all in the last couple days, all in the last week. So very impressive there. And right now has a better class than Florida, which is, honestly, you have to say, is disappointing, right?
Yeah, I mean, Florida is, a lot of people, a lot of Gators fans aren't happy with what is going on there early. I don't panic, I don't worry, because they've got a good coach who develops players. But, you know, you would think Florida would be recruiting at a little bit higher level. And what I like about this class, you know, the 14 commitments, you've got an average star ranking of 3.36. That's a very healthy average star rating. And guess what Florida's average star rating is? It's 3.36 as well. It's not that they've got more commitments and that's the reason they're so far ahead of them, because the quality of commitments is the same. So Arkansas getting it done. Now, I still don't know if he's the guy that can get it done on the field. I still don't know if Arkansas will ever break through in that division. But it's certainly good to see, especially for Arkansas fans, that the recruiting has taken a step up. And when you look at the programs in the country, you know, Alabama, number 1, as expected, Georgia, number 3, Clemson, number 4. You know, a few of the programs that have stepped up their recruiting, Texas A&M under a new coach in Jimbo Fisher, Oregon under a new coach in Mario Cristobal. You know, you've got some programs like Arkansas as well. Ole Miss is 13th in the country with a, you know, sort of a new coach, even though he's already there. You're seeing a lot of programs step up. Mississippi State, number 20 in the country. So I think the new blood that we're getting from all the coaching changes we saw last year is really sort of shifting the recruiting landscape a bit.
Yeah, and Arkansas is doing a tricky and difficult thing. They're going from as big as you can get, run it up the middle, ball control, to spread them out and be as fast as humanly possible. And that doesn't transition very easily. It takes a few years for Chad Morris to put that system in. They open against Eastern Illinois, Colorado State, and North Texas. The Razorbacks are going to be 3-0, going to Auburn on September 22nd. And if you want to make a lot of money, anything under 21 points, go bet the world on Auburn that day.
You think the line's going to be 21 points?
Arkansas at Auburn, September 22nd. Auburn could be one of the best teams in the country. And I don't care. See? You take Arkansas. I'll bet you $2.
If they gave me 3 touchdowns, that's a lot.
That's going to be a 42-10 kind of game.
So you think Arkansas is going to get absolutely thumped by Auburn?
Yeah, September 22nd. Right. That's when real football starts.
California to legalize gambling, clearly. haven't done it yet, but when they do, he's going to be poor as can be.
What do you live, 10 miles from Foxwoods?
No, well, long further than that. I'm closer to the new one, the MGM, that they're building up at Springfield, Massachusetts. They're building an absolutely huge one up there, but again, it's not all, you know, they don't have sports book unless it's, I don't know how it all works.
Well, the problem is I've researched this for friends, and the license is $10 million. So a lot of the casinos are saying they're going to wait until the licensing fees go way down, because no casinos are getting them right now. So, you know, the state, obviously, the swamp wants all their money. And then there's a 35% charge on every ticket booked or something like that. It's crazy fees. So we have to drain the swamp first, and then we'll be fine and we'll be able to have freedom in this country.
I don't even know what drain the swamp means.
don't you watch our president?
No. I don't watch anything that he does. I don't watch Twitter. I don't watch the news. I'm completely oblivious to anything that's going on. Apparently there's some fires out there in Northern California, and there's some fires in Arizona or Nevada or something. I don't know anything. I sit in my little office with my figurines and my helmets, and I just write crap all day that people hate.
You're better off than me, then.
And I look out my little window, and every once in a while someone walks by walking a dog, or UPS shows up to drop something off. That's pretty much my whole life, so I don't really know what drain the swamp means, but it sounds actually horrible.
Everybody in Washington, D.C. needs to be taken out of their jobs and replaced by people who are like Trump. You have to drain the swamp, Mike.
All right, well, let's segue from commitments and draining the swamp to Adam Gorney's fantasy football content. There's college fantasy football on Yahoo. I wish I knew the URL you could go to sign up, but I do know this. You can go to rivals.com, and you can find his college fantasy football content, one of our channels down there. Just scroll down a little bit below my gorgeous face. You'll see college fantasy football. You click on one of his amazing articles, and it says sign up here for free. And you can pick your teams. Now, I'm going through your five risky picks. First of all, I don't think anybody on earth is going to pick Jalen Hurd as a wide receiver at Baylor. So that's risky. You have to be somewhat demented or perhaps binge drinking to put him on your team. But let's move to your next one. JT Daniels, that's a good one, because that is risk-reward. I mean, man, if he starts, he could put up some crazy numbers. We see how talented he is, and you mentioned all that talent around him. But he's risky because he's a true freshman. So what do you do? Kelly Bryant is another one, too. I mean, Trevor Lawrence pushing him. It's like you could see a two-quarterback system there. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Shea Patterson is probably the one that intrigues me the most, because I don't even know if Keller Christ is going to win the job at Tennessee. Patterson, we all know, is going to be the guy at Michigan, but we all know that offense kind of stinks. It's kind of conservative. So is he going to be able to put up big numbers there or not? Will he throw a lot of picks, you know, because he did have a little bit of a penchant for doing that at Ole Miss? I think he's a risky pick. I wouldn't touch him, honestly.
Yeah, the tricky thing with trying to figure out college fantasy football content is you're not just talking about the best players or even the best defenses, really. You're more than anything, even more than in the NFL, it's all about scheduling. It really is like, okay, Shea Patterson can put up four touchdowns against San Diego State. You know, they're a terrible football team, Dave Barry. But, you know, if the Ohio State weekend, the Michigan State weekend, Wisconsin, Penn State, you know, and this is an offense that we don't know what we're going to see. They brought in Jim McElwain as some sort of hope, but he didn't exactly run offense all that well at Florida. Donovan Peoples-Jones, former five-star who's phenomenal, had no receiving touchdowns last year. I think he had 220 receiving yards. Tariq Black is back. Donovan Peoples-Jones is back. Their leading receiver last year was a tight end, but they have Caron Higdon back. So you don't really know what you're going to see from them. And Shea Patterson's numbers at Ole Miss for some games were really good. A lot of other times, not very good at all. He does throw interceptions, which I think will make Jim Harbaugh upset very quickly and might look to go to Brandon Peters quickly. Who knows what we're going to get from Shea Patterson at Michigan. If he's let loose and can kind of do whatever he wants to do and run around and make plays, that's Shea Patterson. I don't know if Harbaugh's going to let him do any of that.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's a lot of people expect big things from Shea Patterson. They think he's worth two wins alone and all this other stuff. And listen, I think he's a talented kid for sure, but he's got to be put in the right position. So Gorney also did a list of freshmen to consider drafting. I first thought this was a list of five freshmen, and then I kept scrolling, and then I thought it was a list of 10 freshmen. But Adam Gorney did every goddamn freshman in the country. I mean, this list goes on and on and on and on. And I'm like, wow, okay. That was a heck of a list there. So I think the one guy that I really look... Two guys that... I mean, Trevor Lawrence we've talked about ad nauseum. We don't need to really talk about him a ton. You know, Justin Fields, if he does play, he's not going to put up big numbers because he's going to be part of a platoon system or put in special packages. I think the two guys that intrigued me the most were Lorenzo Lingard, who is going to Miami, who I think is going to be an absolute star there. And Adrian Martinez in Nebraska, I think he's going to put up some big numbers. I really think he's a great fit for what Scott Frost wants to do. There's talent there. Stanley Morgan is one of the top wide receivers in the country. There's other guys that he can throw to. You know, they've got a big rebuilding job, but I think Martinez, as a freshman, now again, we're talking about freshmen. I'm not saying draft Adrian Martinez, but if you're in a keeper league, and they do offer keeper leagues in fantasy football on Yahoo, Adrian Martinez might be a guy you want to pick up.
Yeah, and this is two things. One, a sign that I have absolutely no life and put together a list of 25 freshmen to draft. But this is mainly for keeper leagues. If you want to take, you know, Mark Pope, if you believe Justin Rogers, who probably redshirts this year, down the road is going to be a start, TCU, take him because he's going to be good. Justin Ross, I think, could see the field early at Clemson. That'll be an interesting one to see. But Adrian Martinez, the feeling out of the people I talked to, which is Nate Klaus at Nebraska and Sean Callahan and those guys, is that he kind of leads for that starting job over Tristan Jebbia. I can definitely see it. Martinez is more athletic. He might have a better arm. He might be exactly what Scott Frost is looking for, kind of a Mackenzie Milton type, but probably a little bit more talented in terms of playing in the Big Ten. And so I think he's going to be a perfect fit, and they're going to, I think, put up points. Stanley Morgan is back. They're going to figure out their running game. They have some options at wide receiver. So Morgan had huge numbers at Nebraska last year in an offense where neither Mike nor I were all that thrilled with Tanner Lee as a quarterback, having much skill at all. And so if you can get him the ball a lot, Scott Frost knows how to run an offense. If you can get him the ball a lot, Morgan's going to put up big yards, and Martinez is probably going to be the guy that that delivers it.
And you got five potential busts here. I'm going to disagree with you on one of them in a big way. Jake Browning. I think he bounces back. Now, did I put Jake Browning on our top five quarterback list for the NFL? No, which we're going to talk about very soon. But I think there's enough talent there. I don't know. I just think he's going to put up numbers that are much closer to 2 years ago than he did this past season. I know he had a down year, you know, but freshman Marcus Spiker is one of those guys I think is just going to catch fire immediately. Yeah. You got Chico McClatcher there. You got Hunter Bryant. There's talent there. And Gaskin catches the ball out of the backfield, too. So I think, you know, he's going to be put in a better position. Peterson's too good a coach to have him sort of lag a little bit. The other one's Travis Homer. I can see, you know, dropping off, especially if Lingard takes some carries away from him or is as good as I expect him to be. Josh Jackson, I could see taking a step back. Jacquez Patrick is obviously sort of an afterthought with Cam Akers emerging. And then Donovan Peoples-Jones, because will they utilize him in the offense? But I think Browning's going to have a good year.
Well, the first, I think Chris Peterson's a phenomenal coach. But here's my thinking on Browning. 2 years ago, he throws for 34, 30, and 43 touchdowns. Last year, he had 19 touchdowns. So even if he gets 10 of those back, he's only at 29, which is solid, but not an incredible year. Hunter Bryant's going to be out with a knee injury early on. Marquise Spiker's new. Chico McClatcher is about 5'6", so how much can you count on him? He put up 19 touchdowns last year with Dante Pettis on the field, and now he's in the NFL, and they're going to lean on Myles Gaskin. I think if you go anywhere in fantasy in Washington's offense, go Myles Gaskin first, Jake Browning down the road. I just think that there are a lot better quarterbacks you know, especially in the Pac-12 that you can go. They start with Auburn, they go to Utah, and that's in the first 3 weeks. So how much early on is Jake Browning going to put up? Maybe later on when they go to BYU, at UCLA, Colorado, you know, Oregon State, Washington State late in the year. But early on, I wouldn't take Jake Browning against Auburn or at Utah.
We'll see. We'll see how he does. And again, this is game to game. So, you know, we're not talking about, you know, you and I are talking about don't start him week one. Don't start
right.
Week two. You know, I'm talking about his entire season. So we'll see how it shakes out. I just see a bounce back year from him. But again, maybe he'll falter. But you got a 4-star, a 3-star, a 4-star, a 5-star, and a 5-star, and you're saying they all suck.
See, that's the weird thing about fantasy is it none of them suck. They're all very, very good players and very nice gentlemen. And I'd have lunch with them anytime.
I don't know that.
But, you know, it's all about who you're playing. Do you want to start Washington's quarterback against Auburn's defensive front? I'm not so sure.
Well, there's probably better starts out there, you know. And again, that's a good way to segue into the quarterbacks. You know, that we put out the list of quarterbacks, top five quarterbacks going into the season. It's on the front page of rivals.com today being Monday. This podcast will be running today, and we'll be promoting it throughout the week. But we're going through each position. So today we're looking at the quarterbacks. Tomorrow, on Tuesday, we'll look at the running backs. On Wednesday, we'll look at the wide receivers and the tight ends. On Thursday, we'll look at the offensive linemen. And, you know, it's an interesting quarterback class because it's not as good as last year. It's not as, you know, hyped. But I think there's a couple guys that are sure first-rounders. I think Stidham, if he takes the next step forward, is a sure first-rounder. He's our number one guy. It was tempting to put Drew Lock at number two. I mean, at number one as well, because he put up such great numbers last year. He's a 6'4" kid. He's 225 pounds now. He sees the field very well. He's accurate. Then it gets a little iffy after that because there's question marks about Justin Herbert. You know, he didn't put up great numbers last year. He's got very good mobility for a big quarterback. I mean, this is a 6'6" kid. He completed 67% of his passes last year. Didn't throw a lot of interceptions, but still didn't light up the world. And he's going to take a big next step. Shea Patterson the same way. And then Ryan Finley. You know, last year threw for 3,500 yards, but only 17 touchdowns. But he did rush for 3, and he's another big kid who can move around. So quarterback class, very interesting. Much different than last year when you had, I don't know, Rosen and Darnold. Who the heck else am I missing that was way up at the
Baker top? Mayfield, Lamar Jackson.
Baker didn't start at the top. And remember, nobody thought Lamar would be a first rounder. I thought there was somebody else that was super hyped up there. I'm trying to think of who it was. But I will draw blank because the 2018 draft class is out of my head entirely at this point in time.
Yeah.
So,
how about this, Mike? 3 of the top 5 guys transfers.
Yeah, not a big surprise to me. You know, I mean, this is the way the world is working. And when you look at our profiles on him, you see Jarrett Stidham, and it shows signed Baylor 2014, and you're going to be looking like, what the heck? Why is he listed at Baylor? But he's a guy who got out of that Baylor situation, transferred to a JUCO, didn't play at all. Big famous debate about why we didn't rank him at all. Well, he didn't play football for a full year, so he was technically a transfer, not a JUCO transfer. So he's showing Baylor. You know, Drew Lock has obviously been starting at Missouri since his freshman year. Herbert's at Oregon. But then, you know, Shea Patterson, Ole Miss, getting out of another bad situation with NCAA yeah. implications. And then Ryan Finley, just too good for Boise State, I guess. I don't know. He redshirted and he played a couple seasons. He got hurt. Then he transferred to NC State, and now he's a superstar.
You think if Boise State and NC State played 10 times that NC State would win more than half of those games?
No, I think Boise State would probably beat them 6 or 7 times out of 10, probably.
Yeah, probably too. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. And two of them left programs, obviously scandal-ridden transfers, so not just guys that weren't playing or whatever, but just interesting that you know, we always put the mark on guys that transfer, and they're always a concern and all this stuff. But three of the five are guys that have transferred into a new school.
Yeah, none of them are a concern really at all. You know, you don't worry about it. It's not a Blake Barnett situation where it's like, can you just please pick a freaking school and stick with your decision for once in your life. I mean, when you see a quarterback doing that, you have to wonder about the decision-making process and where his head's at and all that other stuff. But with these guys, I mean, two of them got out of bad situations and the other one upgraded his situation, at least upgraded where he's playing an ACC schedule and he's playing in the Power 5. So he's, you know, scouts look at that stuff very closely. So the running backs, this was a tough one too, because I mean, number one was difficult to figure out for me.
Yeah, I don't have that list up, so run down the five.
Well, I don't have it up either, so it's a bit of a problem. No, it was Damian Harris I chose as number one, and I'm actually going to work on that today. So Damian.
Oh, here we go.
Damian Harris was number one, and Bryce Love was number two, and I was like trying to figure out, okay, which one of these guys should be one and two. Because there's a big drop.
Bryce Love should be one.
Nah, Damian Harris, I don't know. Last year he added a lot of speed. I know Najee Harris is coming. I know he's going to get his carries. If you're talking about stats, Bryce Love's going to put up better stats if he stays healthy. I mean, the guy ran for 2,100 yards last year, but he also had double the attempts of Damian Harris, and Damian Harris still ended up with over 1,000 yards. So I think Damian Harris is continuing to add speed. The one thing he added last year was breakaway speed that he didn't have the year before. Decides to come back, get faster. He's going to be a Heisman candidate at Alabama, and I think he's got that build. That's the difference between the two of them for me. Damian Harris has that build, that squat, Mark Ingram type of build that I think the NFL likes, where he's got so much power in his lower body, whereas Bryce Love is not quite as put together. And I think Bryce could get hurt this year if he has to carry the load like that. I read your article about how they're not going to worry about stats for him and all that stuff, but he's still going to get a ton of carries, and we'll see if he can hold up. After him was Rodney Anderson. What did I call him?
What did you call him? I don't know.
Didn't I call him by the wrong name?
Oh, you called him Ryan Anderson, the Alabama linebacker.
Yeah, it just shows you how senile I'm becoming. So, Rodney Anderson out of Oklahoma had some ridiculous games last year. Second in the Big 12 in rushing. Benny Snell was not high on anybody else's board. I was just like shocked.
Yeah, I like this pick.
It's crazy. I'm like, what are you guys missing? Kid rushed for 1,300 yards, 19 touchdowns. He averaged over 100 yards a game. He is third only to Kerryon Johnson and Nick Chubb in rushing.
Yeah, yards. So he's the leading returning rusher, yeah. Touchdown rusher in the SEC.
And I can tell you, he runs angry. He's a very angry runner. He reminds me of Darius Geis, where first contact, he's going to shake you off, and he's going to be very difficult to tackle. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He still has a chip on his shoulder. He still complains and moans about the fact that he was a three-star coming out of high school. The kid is angry. He wants to rush for 2,000 yards this season. I don't think he can do that, but I think he can put up big, big numbers. And I think he's a guy who, if he runs in that 4-5 range, the NFL is going to like quite a bit. So I was just stunned, just looking out there and talking to scouts and things like that. It's like these running backs kept coming up. You know, Damian Harris, Bryce Love, and Rodney Anderson, and Miles Gaskin, and no Benny Snell anywhere. I didn't hear his name once. But we put him fourth here, and Miles Gaskin fifth.
With Bryce Love, I think they're gonna handle Bryce Love a lot like Christian McCaffrey is junior or his sophomore to junior year. His numbers plummeted almost. His carries plummeted. They're going to use him as a decoy a lot more, and they're not going to worry about stats as much. But Bryce Love, every game last year, 100 yards at least. He had 10 games where he rushed for more than 30 yards a carry, or he had a carry of more than 30 yards in 10 games, I think. So breakaway speed is there. I think he's going to get a lot of Christian McCaffrey comparisons, and I think the Panthers are going to use McCaffrey a whole lot this year, his second year. So I would have Bryce Love number one on this list. I love Snell. Kentucky's not exactly a quarterback or wide receiver center this year. They're not going to have much of any of that, so I think they're going to rely on Snell so much more. I think Gaskin will continue to put up big yards. Anderson obviously will. And then it's going to be interesting to see how Nick Saban handles the running backs at Alabama. And Damian Harris led the team in rushing with 1,000 yards right on the nose, but Jalen Hurts had the most carries on the team last year, believe it or not, like 20 more than Damian Harris. And then I think Najee Harris will take that Bo Scarborough role, but probably even more prominent. It'll be interesting to see how they handle that, because Najee Harris has a year after Damian Harris leaves. We'll see who becomes the feature back in that offense. I still think Damian Harris will get the carries, but I think Najee Harris probably splits or is just around the number that Damian Harris gets.
And this is what a degenerate I am. I just got an email from a friend of mine about the MGM that's opening August 24th in 2018. So the grand opening is August 24th, and they are going to get a sports bar, book.
Really? Yeah. That's interesting.
My life's over.
Yeah.
It's over. Moving on to the wide receivers, I really like the top two guys on this list. I mean, I think A.J. Brown is absolutely special. I think he could be a top 5-10 pick, you know, in that Julio Jones, A.J. Green type of thing. N'Keal Harry, I like a lot as well. I think there's a little bit of a drop-off, even though South Carolina fans will tell you Deebo Samuel is the greatest wide receiver to ever lace up cleats. We've got him third. Marquise Hollywood Brown from Oklahoma, slot receiver. I think he's going to run real well at the combine. He might drop on this list, though, because size is an issue. I just think he's going to have a crazy year statistically in that offense. And then Stanley Morgan Jr., we mentioned already, for Nebraska, some of the best ball skills you're ever going to see.
Yeah, I like this list a lot. And it's funny to think Ole Miss could have probably two, maybe top five picks in Greg Little and A.J. Brown. That'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I love A.J. Brown. I think he's fantastic. And what he has going for him is DeMarcus Lodge and D.K. Metcalf and Dawson Knox at tight end. There's going to be a lot of options where they're not going to be able to fixate on just stopping A.J. Brown. So I think he's going to catch a lot of passes, and I think Lodge and Metcalf could have big breakout years. If you read my fantasy football content, I mentioned that.
Yeah, anyway, I missed that one.
N'Keal Harry. It'll be interesting to see how Herm Edwards runs offense. I don't think anybody knows anything of what's going to happen there, but getting him and Kyle Williams the ball will be big for them. And then Deebo Samuel coming back. The offense at South Carolina has not been very good under Will Muschamp. I think they were 12th in the SEC last year, and you know, with Jake Bentley at quarterback, I think Deebo Samuel can have a big year, although I don't think he's anywhere near the best wide receiver ever to lace up cleats. So that's an interesting list. But even more importantly, Mike, this MGM in Springfield, $960 million resort. That's like a $1 billion resort.
Yeah. There's a whole big battle. They're redoing the entire highway. The entire highway of, you live there. I mean, it's 91 north and south. They're redoing entire highway. They've been redoing it for like 6 months now to accommodate six lanes or something because of all the traffic.
Because they think traffic to the casino?
Yeah. Now, where I live. Wow. In East Windsor, Connecticut, they're putting a little satellite casino. So I will technically be literally 7 minutes from a casino.
Now, can you do anything you want at that casino, at the big casino?
To a scaled-down version, obviously. They're not going to have the big concerts and, you know, but they'll have all the gambling. Once Connecticut legalizes gambling, they'll have a sports book there and all that stuff, and you know, horse racing and dog racing and all that stuff. I could be moving from my office and staring out the window to being one of those absolute degenerates that smells like moldy cheese and death, who just sits in the horse racing room for 5 straight days. That could be me.
I'll tell you, the rooms at this place look phenomenal. Wow, this place is nice.
It's huge. There was a big battle as to who was going to get it. There was a battle of Eastern Massachusetts wanted it. I think the Worcester area wanted it. There was a bidding war. Lots of shady dealings, I'm sure. And Springfield won it out. And Springfield's kind of a dump. It's not a good city. but this thing's
gonna I was there. That's where the Basketball Hall of Fame is, right?
It is. That area of Springfield is nice, but the rest of it's an absolute dump, and that's where they're gonna put it right off the highway.
I have to admit, I wasn't impressed with Springfield when I drove through it.
No, it's a dump. But with this casino, it's going to change everything. So the tight ends, I like Noah Fant. I like a lot. I think Caleb Wilson's okay. Caden Smith's okay. But I like Noah Fant a lot. I don't think it's as good a tight end class as it was last year. And I'm not sure any of these guys are first-rounders. We'll have to wait and see. And then the offensive linemen, we went Greg Little, Jonah Williams, Trey Adams. And that was tough. Those three guys, I mean, you could order those any way you want, honestly, because all three of them, I think, are first-rounders. All three of them, I think, are potential top 18, 20 picks in the draft. Yeah. And again, it's so early, but why not do this? Then David Edwards and Mitch Hyatt after that. So, you know, we've got that draft stuff coming, and we're like the first, right? I haven't seen anybody else put out lists.
First to market, that's the important thing, isn't it?
First to market. Oh, wait, doesn't matter if you're right or wrong, as long as you're first. That was one of the first things I ever learned. And I didn't go to journalism school. Actually, I went for management. And as you can tell by my managing style,
incredible.
It really paid off, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we're done. What's that, 49 minutes? That's pretty good.
I'm spent, I know
that. Yeah, I'm tired. I need a nap.
All right.
Dave's like half asleep.
Yeah. I'm just waking up from my nap. Yeah, right. All right. Well, let's get out of here. Let's remind everybody you can give us a review on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. So
what do we have? One of those so far?
Yeah, like three.
Come on.
And it's from Fike Merrill.
Even if we suck, just leave us a review to say we suck.
Yeah, something. Let us know you're still listening at this point of the podcast.
Right. I mean, my God. This is our 50th episode, and our listenership is going down.
That's all right. Peaks and valleys.
Well,
Mike,
we've got ourselves a new strategy moving forward. So now we're going to...
Did you say strategy?
I said strategy. We're going to pump some numbers with the new strategy.
All right.
That's not the way you say it?
All right. We will see everybody again next week.